Okay, can everyone hear me reasonably well without their ears bleeding? Welcome, everyone. Meeting is called to order. Jane, will you please take the roll?
These mics that are on the tables are pretty sensitive, I'm told. And so for the folks that are on audio, it's best to make sure that the mic on your table, that the green light is off. And when you just press the button there in the middle, it'll turn green and then talk. Thank you. Abramovich.
Here.
Albertson.
I am here.
Okay, barely heard you. I might have problems hearing you folks online. If for some reason I do, please send me an email if I miss you. Baker. Tori Baker. Barnes.
Here.
Berge. Bret Hart.
Here.
Jesse Cable. C. Hey, Wendy Krosky is here for Vincent. Chen. Is anybody here for Chang Fu Chen? Kaufman.
Here.
Condi. Cook. Davis. Mike. I can see you. We're just seeing if the audio works.
Obviously. It's working. Mike just doesn't know how to use it.
Thank you,
God. Thank you. Dean.
Here.
Duke.
Here.
Fallon.
Here.
Fochisato.
Here.
Gibson. Gustafson. Hahn. Hardy. Healy.
Here.
Okay. Horstman. Johnson.
Here.
Johnston.
Here.
Jolly. Anybody here for Julie? Keeland. Okay, Falk is here for Knut. Barden.
Here.
Lovecraft.
Present. Well, not there, but here.
Gotcha. McCartney.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Misra.
Here.
Moser.
Present online.
Newberry. Radenbaugh.
Yes, I am on the video.
Thanks. Shellcross.
Yes, here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor. Peter Windsor. Yari. And Peterson.
Peterson's online.
Okay, thank you for Shangjing. And acknowledging Falk is here wearing two hats today. We have our registrar here today. Okay, Libby's here. Anyone from staff council?
This is Brad Crick. I'm here.
Okay, hi, Brad. Anyone from ASUAF? Athletics? Okay, we have Dean Herman here and our Vice Provost Alex Fitz. We have our Provost and just waiting on our Chancellor. Cindy Hardy is here for the Student Academic Development and Achievement Committee. And Eric Madsen, I think we're good.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Jane. I received an email from the Chancellor earlier today saying that he would be late. An emergency came up at CTC that he needed to be away for, so he did let us know. Next item of business is approval of minutes from the last meeting, meeting number 197. Are there any corrections or modifications needed to the minutes from March? Seeing none, I need a motion to adopt. Thank you. And a second? Thank you. All right, any opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. And secondly, is there a you see before you the agenda. Are there any additions or modifications that anyone would like to make to today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, the agenda is adopted, and we move along to status of the Chancellor's office actions. All of the motions that we passed at the last Senate meeting have been approved by the Chancellor, and are so there are no motions pending before us, and we move now to my remarks. I'm going to keep them brief because we have a lot of business today. You're probably aware that the Board of Regents acted at the end of last week to do a number of things, but two things that were near and dear to the faculty were a motion to adopt a common calendar among the three universities in the University of Alaska system, and a resolution to adopt a common set of general education requirements. This is something that will be of great interest to the faculty at all three universities in the next year. And to that end, I have to speak to another bit of bad news, which is that ordinarily the Faculty Alliance, which consists of the three Senate presidents, president-elects, and past presidents, normally it has a rotation of who will serve as the next chair of that particular group of people, of the Senate leadership for the three universities. This year we held an election, and I am going to be the Faculty Alliance chair next year. So this is relatively new news to me, and it's just great that one of the first things that comes up is that we are going to have some challenging times as a faculty among the three universities with respect to these and with respect to this motion and that resolution in the coming year. Finally, there's a brief thing that I'd like to announce about a bit of coordination among the three universities at the general education level. The General Education Learning Outcome Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Faculty Alliance, has produced a set of recommended common learning outcomes across the three universities. As a starting point, it used the learning outcomes that this Faculty Senate adopted back in 2011 and made some relatively minor modifications to it. What I'll be doing is posting our current learning outcomes that we have here at UAF and the recommended learning outcomes from JELO. We're being asked, each of the faculty senates is being asked to adopt these as a set of common learning outcomes. So I'll be coming back to you at the next faculty senate meeting, our last of the year, to see if you are willing to adopt the new learning outcomes as proposed by the Faculty Alliance Subcommittee. And that is it for my remarks. Are there any questions? Debu?
Will we have a chance to review the JELO recommendations before you bring it to the Senate?
Yes, that's the idea of behind putting it online for on the discussion board. I'll be posting both the current ones that we have and the JELO recommendations so that you can see the differences.
David, this is Mike Davis here in Dillingham. Just curious on these proposed merging of the calendars. Is that also going to include the starting time and ending time for classes? I know there's been a conflict. I've had students from that are UAA students that have had difficulty meeting our schedule. Is that also part of the agenda?
Yes, it is. It includes the start and end dates for the semester. It includes class meeting times. It includes the time of recesses, including spring break and winter break. So yes, it includes just about everything on the calendar.
So, because some, I think they have UAA has 50-minute periods versus some of ours, so all that's going to have to be standardized and uniform as well, then. Is that your understanding as well?
That's right, Mike. You're absolutely right.
Thanks. Thank you.
Ken, yeah.
Dave, could you talk a little bit about the process by which this new calendar is going to be created? And one other thing, partial semester courses, how is that going to be affected? If you have like a 7-week course, is that going to be brought into it also, or will 2 7-week courses be allowed to be offered during a 15-week semester?
Thank you for your confidence in my ability to know the answer to those questions. Normally the calendar is the purview of faculty, and I think that the Faculty Alliance will have to take lead on this to try to come up with that, along with each of the 3 faculty senates, to try to come up with a calendar that that all 3 universities can live with. Beyond that, I can't really tell you. There's there will be a lot of interesting discussions for sure. I mean, this will mean that at least one university will always be out of sync with the local school district. It will mean that we may need to consider things like a 2-week spring break. I don't know. There's a lot of questions that will have to be answered in this process.
This is Amy Lovecraft. May I ask a question? I haven't called in before. Is that what I do? Just ask?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Amy.
I find this really troubling, and I'm wondering, is there something that you or anyone has in terms of inside information about why this is really happening? It just doesn't seem to meet the stated goals that it of why it's being done. It seems to me there's I don't know of any other university system in any other state. So if others do, please tell me, that does something like this where they coordinate the times of all the classes across their units across the state.
Several of the regents have a vision for the university system that is essentially that we are all one university. And I think it's fairly clear that this resolution and this motion are moving us in that direction.
And is there anything can we just say no? Do we have the capacity as faculty senates, especially the Faculty Alliance, if we don't like this? I mean, do we have to accept it? Is it open for debate, or is it a non-debatable directive?
The motion that the Board of Regents passed, because it's a motion, it has the force of, it's essentially a dictate that we do have to comply with. The general education requirements is a resolution, and I just had a conversation with the provost just before the start of the meeting. And essentially, a resolution does not have the force of policy from the Board of Regents. However, it would likely go badly for us if the universities did not make a good faith effort to move in that direction.
How so badly? What will they do? Refuse to fund us?
There's all kinds of things that they could potentially do. And I just noticed out of the corner of my eye that the provost has a comment, so I will happily defer to her on this.
As I was saying to Dr. Valentine before the meeting, a resolution expresses the intent and desire of the Board of Regents. It doesn't have the same force as policy, but it indicates what the board wants us to do. Now, we have a couple of options. One is to simply do what the board wants us to do. Another is to do what the board wants us to do, but in a way that aligns with our own goals for the university as well. That is to try to find a middle ground or a win-win solution to this situation. Certainly, the third possibility where the faculty become active resistors to what the board wants can't be ruled out, in the sense that we've certainly seen that play out in other systems in certain circumstances, or at least at other universities in certain circumstances. My own opinion here is that that will waste tremendous amounts of time and energy on both our parts, and that the approach that I would like to see is to go forward to find a solution that will satisfy the faculty, that will make them comfortable with the result, but will also satisfy the Board of Regents. Now, that may be quite difficult. I'm not glossing over the challenges that exist there. But I think that a pitched battle between the two entities at this point in the university's history, with declining budgets and a need to project ourselves as a very worthy and competent institution to the rest of the state, to our potential students, to our the constituents that inform our legislators, I really don't think we want to go there. It's not just about having a conflict with the Board of Regents, but what that makes the university look like in terms of the people that fund us. Now, again, you know, what can the board do to us if we refuse? There are potential consequences in terms of what budgets they put forward to the legislature, whether or not they approve any new programs or other initiatives, new centers or other things that we might want the Board of Regents to approve. Those are some examples of things that are within their power to not do should we enter into an actively oppositional relationship with them.
So then, could anybody just answer the other question? Does anybody know of any state anywhere in the United States that has all of its MAUs, I know we're not supposed to use that phrase, all of its units on the same time schedule?
I don't know of any examples offhand. I will certainly research that. But we are different from other states, as we have often said, and one of the issues is that as a small state with a widely dispersed population, in order to best serve that population, ideally, we would offer even more of what we, even more of our course offerings by distance. And really, the move toward a common calendar, the main rationale for that is to facilitate more synchronous offerings of courses by distance technologies, rather than having only the asynchronous online option, having the option using video conference or other technologies to actually have students meeting together in a virtual sense at a single time. And as faculty member Mike Davis pointed out, that has been a challenge for some students who might want to take a course at UAF from UAA or from UAS.
Thank you.
I would just, at the risk of spending too much more time on this, there are other things that I think that we as faculty can do with respect to general education requirements. We can choose to view them somewhat more minimally than we have, somewhat less expansively than we have, in order to arrive at a common set of GERs if the Board of Regents wants to push that, that we would have a relatively minimal set of GERs that just meets the Board of Regents' policy and university regulations and goes no further. Having the rest of what might be called general education fall in some other category, like degree requirement or some such. And that's just a might. There are options that we could potentially look at. Yes, Deb.
A quick question to Provost Hendricks. You mentioned that by being, and the intention is not to be confrontational at all with the Board of Regents, but I have a problem when Board of Regents passes a motion without even consulting with faculty, I don't know if they have consulted with the administration, but the more important thing that you brought up is catering to the constituency. Have they even discussed anything with the constituency? Because I know in the last meeting when Chancellor, last to last, if I remember, Chancellor Rogers brought this up, the faculty actually expressed that women, for example, you know, if there is mismatch between schedules, then, well, not women, I shouldn't really get, but people will have issues with childcare, you know, and whole lot of suites of issues. And that actually affect our constituencies, which are community, okay? And the Board of Regents haven't taken any paid any attention to that as far as I can see. This was just moved in a consent agenda.
There was some testimony to the Board of Regents. There was also some written communication to the Board of Regents that pointed out the issues that were raised here last time. I seem to have lost that. It's on. The green light is on, but it's not.
Everything is off.
My screen changed up here. I'll carry on just with this answer then. The board did hear the input that now it's come back. Did hear the input and the questions and the concerns that were raised, but they chose to. Do what they did because they believed that it was in the best interest of the university as a whole. It's not that the board believes that there will be no inconvenience or no problem caused by this. I think they recognize that for some people and some groups, this will be more difficult than the current system. But they strongly believe that the benefits outweigh the costs. For different people in different groups, of course, that balance is different, but that's why they passed the motion.
Because we have so many other things we have to get to. Anna, do you have something really quick?
So I guess really quickly, and you don't even have to answer this, but I would urge the Board of Regents or anyone who makes decisions on this level to maybe also consider what action the university can do to alleviate the hardships that will come of any of their actions. So it's not enough to just say, well, let's make this easier for one constituency, namely the students. How is it going to affect the staff and the faculty, and what can we do to maybe alleviate that? Just a comment. Thanks.
Thank you, Anna. I guess this can serve as a reminder that it's important to be involved in shared governance, and that and perhaps this is highlighting the importance of we as the Faculty Senate doing the best job we possibly can. Okay, we'll move on now to President-elect.
I just lost
you. Since we
speak loudly.
Okay. All right. We have a huge agenda, so I'm going to pass on my comments. I am starting to question the wisdom and my timing of of starting my year as faculty senate president. Too late now. No, but I've learned a huge amount this year, it's really been quite rewarding. I'm really looking forward in some ways to next year, but we will have some pretty big issues. So that's all I'm going to say this time, so we can get to our agenda.
Thank you, Cecile. and the chancellor's not with us yet, so we'll move straight to provost remarks.
All right. Well, I was going to say a bit about the action at the Board of Regents, but I think we've covered that already. So I will move on to the other thing that's been occupying a tremendous amount of time of many people, but myself in particular, and that is the Planning and Budget Committee. In early February, received the input of the Budget Options Group in terms of potential ways in which the university could save
save money, reduce costs, mostly, mind you, not painlessly, mostly by eliminating some activities or services that we're offering. However, we have a pretty big
budget gap to address. We have approximately $12 to $14 million of less money to spend in the next fiscal year, according to the actions that we're seeing nearly concluded at the legislature. So we have to have a way to deal with that, and it won't be pleasant, but it is a necessity. We've received a number of questions about what the budget Planning and Budget Committee is doing. Basically, we are reviewing the options brought forward by the Budget Options Group, as well as some additional options that we solicited early in the time when our committee was first constituted from the University Committee. So we have a larger group of options that we're looking at. The potential savings, the pros and cons, the impacts on other university units and entities, the impacts on future revenue, all these things are being assessed by subcommittees within the Planning and Budget Committee. The reports of those subcommittees are due this week. They will be submitted to the vice chancellors that are responsible for the particular area being affected, a report on each of the options that's been identified. Those vice chancellors will have the opportunity to respond, and then the recommendations of the Planning and Budget Committee will be finalized, and those will be sent forward to the Chancellor's Cabinet. There is some information about the Planning and Budget Committee process, which either has already been made available at a public website or will be very soon. We early in our process established some working principles for our activities. We also have written out the process and the schedule that we're following. That information should be available on the website. And then finally, there will be now weekly reports from me going forward on what's happened in the Planning and Budget Committee in a particular week. Ultimately, and our work will be concluding toward the end of April. Ultimately, when the work of the committee is done, the reports of the committee will be posted similarly to how the results of the budget option group were posted. So, people will be able to see those shortly after they are supplied to the Chancellor's Cabinet. And of course, we would anticipate at that time there may be some people wanting to feedback relative to what the committee has recommended. But we do want the process to be transparent for people to be able to see what the recommendations of the committee will be. And so that information will be available. I'm happy to answer any questions that people may have about the process or what the committee is doing.
Thank you, Provost Hendricks. We move now to, I keep seeing the president come in. Okay. Thank you. There you are. We have a spot for you up here, President Gamble.
Hi.
To the chair.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Thank you very much for joining us, President Gamble.
Afternoon, everybody. Well, let's see. Is there anything going on to talk about? The year is reaching a screaming crescendo, as I'm sure all of you know, with your students and your courses and your advising. The report's coming out of Juneau today. Everybody's real anxious about what's the real budget. Through the murk and the mist, there are shapes beginning to take form. The Senate, very surprisingly, looks like they've added a chunk of capital money into our budget. which will probably be announced this afternoon. Now, that doesn't mean that hourly between now and the 20th when they ring out that that won't change, but I think the indications are that they are going to make good on their promise to try to kind of clear the decks, as I like to look at it, and not load themselves with the same problem again next year between the the heat and power plant and the engineering buildings. So right now it looks like there's going to be a modest amount of money that will come forward on the engineering building here. There will be a chunk of money that will go forward on the engineering building in Anchorage. There will be a huge chunk of money that will be coming this way for the power plant. And it looks like they're trying to get most of that off the table all in 1 year. And so there'll be some residual dollars that would probably finish off the engineering building next year in Fairbanks. And then the two big competing efforts would pretty much be done. Now, those aren't the only dollars. There are also some deferred maintenance dollars in there. There's the one that I've never heard of before, and that is the in case your power plant fails, we'll give you $12.5 million to burn diesel. I said, wait a minute. I've heard of imaginative budget building, but that one really takes the cake, because the first question you ask is, okay, what happens to the $12.5 million if the power plant doesn't quit? Well, you know, don't have the answer to the question, but I'd like to think that maybe they say, oh, well, okay, well, since we, you know, authorized it for Fairbanks in the first place, we'll just throw that on the pile and let you keep it. I don't know. I'm just talking off the top of my head here. But the good news is, though, I think that on the capital side, we see some real promise. Now, it's not a free lunch. As you all know, there are some payment burdens that come back to the university here that are quite large. The state picks up the biggest chunk by far, but here we're doing things like, the approximately $4 million a year in energy savings that a new power plant would cost avoid, then turns around and becomes part of the debt service. Instead of paying those bills out for energy, you turn around and pay the same equivalent amount in savings out in cash for debt service. And there's some additional debt service that goes along with that. So it's going to be a real tight year for 15. Now, we made the point that we haven't even figured out how to allocate the $15 yet. We're going to have a meeting this week in order to start the process for figuring out what are the allocations then to meet the approximately $16 million cut from our budget that we're executing right now, the 14 budget. That's our starting point, is $16 million less than that. And we got some bills to pay, paying benefits, for example, and fixed costs that come back in and sit down. So you do all that netting out, and then you say, that's the 15 budget. Now, how do you allocate that to the three universities on a proportional basis? In the past, we were sharing growth. So if you got 10, 12, 14 extra million dollars, the allocation was a lot more fun. When you're declining, the allocation is not so much fun. And so that process, we're going to have to get serious about it starting this week. Building up with all the issues in Juneau and then building up for the board meetings and so on and so forth, we frankly really haven't taken that on. The summit team has talked about it twice. The preference on the part of the chancellors is to do it basically just on a proportional basis. And so the chancellors are in the process of having pretty much figured out what that is, and I'll be talking to them to make sure we validate those numbers and get them locked down so that we can go forward. We start to build the 16 budget in 5 months. We don't even know how we're going to allocate the 15 budget yet. We don't even know what the 15 budget's going to look like. The word we got a couple of days ago is that 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, they're all going to look about the same until the state starts getting revenue back in the pipeline. Oil is where the money comes from. It isn't the gas line. Gas line just kind of stabilizes the cost of energy. It doesn't go up as fast. Puts a lot of people to work. That's good. But oil is where the money is. And until oil comes out of the ground, goes through the pipeline, and the state gets its royalty share, then all you can hope for is the stock market and the permanent fund, and that's about it. There's not a whole lot else going on. So with our big budget, we're going to see it go down, and then it'll probably flatten out. And then it's up to us to figure out you can only do so much in savings or offsets or cost cutting, and that seems to be all we talk about. But where is the possibility of earning additional revenue? And it's not anything we've actually had to worry about before, because with student growth every year, the model works. The model depends on student growth every year. When the student growth isn't there or declining, that model doesn't work. And so if you look for alternatives to tuition in order to boost it up again and make the model work, where are those alternatives? We like to use this example that came out last week, which is probably, like all examples, it's a stretch. You know, you find a really neat example, and you put it way out here. And so I'm not saying this is something that we need to try to emulate, but to give you an idea, we're not the only folks who have this problem. Arizona had this problem big time. They had huge cuts. University of Arizona, Arizona State have both recovered very, very well since the last bubble popped. And they're on a growing spurt that is the envy of many, many universities. One of the things they did is they took the Maricopa County Community College and basically oriented it toward business workforce training. 265,000 students in that community college, and they get $8 million from the state to run it, which is a pittance.
Hi, I'm Jen, Alaska Airlines Automated Travel Assistant. For help on our website, type your question below.
The way they did that was that the idea that when students come in, well, first of all, they marketed themselves to companies. They said, what do you need your employees to do for you? And then they turn around and they built the education and training courses, mostly training, to meet those specific demands from companies who need workforce development. Now, we've got workforce development in the state of Alaska scattered everywhere. There's a list this long of people who are in the, quote, workforce development, unquote, business. And it's just a jobs program, basically. I mean, and they develop, but the numbers are very, very small. We could compete in that market if we chose as an institution to want to do that. We could go in and compete in that market. We could go out and advertise and market to businesses and say, give us your requirements, and then we educate and train to meet those requirements on a profit-making basis in the community campus area. That's a way to make alternative dollars
to earn revenue,
not just cut. Those kinds of things are what we've got to look at, because the model doesn't work when you have successive years of tight budgets and you wring all the flexibility out of efficiencies and savings and offsets and all those words we use, and then finally cuts. You know, we've got about 61% of our total costs are our people costs. How long is it before you go through everything you can go through before you have to start wading into personnel? And the first thing you do is you start looking for the vacancies. Where are the funded vacancies that aren't out there on the market? We're not advertising them. They've been vacant for a year. You know, you start down that path. Okay, well, but their salaries being applied. Every year we're counting them. And you start digging into people a little bit at a time. Who are the people that are close to retirement? Is there something you can do to hurry them on out the door? How many times have we seen that? And so on and so forth. There's no magic here. These are the things that every organization I've been associated with, including the Department of Defense, have always used in a time of cutbacks. And we're facing that. The way to get out of that to the greatest degree possible is to try like heck to find ways to earn revenue. And the stock market's not going to do it. Our investments aren't going to make up the difference, nor is the overhead coming from research going to make up the difference. We can't raise the tuition high enough on the students to cover the bills, and then it just comes back the next year and starts all over again, and you have to raise the tuition again. Well, that isn't going to cover it. The numbers are in the double digits, and that's not going to work. So what do we do? That's a big question mark right now. And it's not likely that many of us who have been here for less than 10 or 12 years know any different than getting more money from the state every single year. You haven't been in a position in this university system to try to work cuts, and so we don't have a lot of expertise right now working the problem. We've got a lot of people who are thinking it through and trying, but it's been so long since we've had to do it that there aren't many of us, in me and most of the staff I'm working with included, who have ever gone through it here at the university. So that's also something working against us. We've got to relearn what people did the last time and see if those things are relevant, and then see if we can adapt and do some of those things again this time. I will tell you that I've seen in the frustration, and believe me, this is a time that generates a lot of frustration. You all have some wonderful programs. You've got great students. You are passionate about the programs. You're loyal to the programs, and there's a sense of real concern about what does a university do. I mean, we're in the education business. How can we educate if all we talk about is cutting programs? But I think it was actually some work that Susan did that showed clearly that the last time we went through big cuts, it took years to recover. And we've tried to make that point to the legislature. And I will tell you that if you think that we can go down there and just become more shrill and laugh or talk louder and you know, beat on the table with a fist and try to get them, or like I like to say, talk louder and slower, you know, you don't understand. Let me educate you. That doesn't go over real well in the legislature. They could sure use it in some cases, I'll guarantee you, but it doesn't go over real well. So they're not interested in hearing that story, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore because they're into big-time cost-cutting too. And my observation right now is that things like investment, that's not a word they're interested in hearing. It goes right over their head. Everything is an expense right now. All the things that are important, all the programs that are important, whether they're social programs, whether they're health programs, programs for children, programs for you name it, in the social and health side and the education side, everything's an expense, and that's the way they look at it. So we will keep working on the legislature. We've got a lot of friends there, and like I've said before, if they could find one more dollar, I'm convinced they would give it to us because our stock is high. Your stock is high. What you do is well recognized down there. We get nothing but compliments based on what's coming out of this university system. It's probably as good as it's been in years and years. And the credit goes to the programs and the students that you have, because those students are speaking up loud and clear, and they love to go to school here. So we don't have a problem in that area. I mean, they understand, and they would give us the next dollar if they had one. But if they don't have that next dollar, going down and threatening Harry Carey on the Osterman's desk in House Finance, He's probably going to sharpen the blade first. He just doesn't have anything that he can do about that. And I use this thing happening in the Senate right now that may be very surprising, that when they told us over and over again, Senator Kelly, co-chair of Senate Finance, sat right here in this room in August of last year, sat right here in this room in our budget meeting and told us how tough it was going to be and how there wasn't going to be a lot of money. And then all of a sudden today, we're seeing those additional dollars come in on the Senate. So our credibility is good, or we wouldn't be getting those dollars at all, because they've got plenty of other places they could spend them. So all the indicators are our stock is up, our stock is high. We want to keep our credibility good. But the way to do that now is to try to come up with some ways to figure out alternative sources of revenue. And I'll tell you, I will take, there are no bad ideas, there are no crazy ideas. I'll take anything you can think of or come up with. Now, research is for UAF is vitally important for the system. Those of you involved in specifically in grant research, where there is overhead, that's discretionary money. And so working real hard in a tight federal government environment, we still have a real advantage. Proportionate to our size, we bring in a lot of good research, and there's more out there to come. And the more that your research is credible and gains notoriety, which it's doing right now in a number of different areas, the more likely that you're going to be recognized again with additional grants. And so there are no complaints in that area. We're really doing well, I think. That's an area where we can continue to push and push and push. Now, it means we got to follow all the rules. We got to dot the I's, cross the T's, and really, really be good as PIs at doing everything the right way so that our reputation for all this is solid. But I think there's opportunity in that area for additional grant dollars. But it's going to have to be very focused and very specific, and it's going to have to probably be in certain niche areas where we know there's a demand that can't be fulfilled by other people. If we're going to take competition on, let's take competition on that we play our game in our field, and they have to beat us at that. That means we don't go down and compete with 10 or 15 of the largest universities in the Midwest who are all doing the same kind of stuff, and we just throw ourselves into the middle of that. We need to find the niches where we compete. We compete on our own terms better than anybody else. And so far, I think, particularly in UAF, we've been really adept at doing that. So we don't want to let up on that at all. And finally, the last thing I would say to you today, just out of curiosity, how many people caught the board meeting? Did you listen to the streaming, or did you see it on VT? Anybody? Can you raise a hand and let me just see? Okay, not too many. Well, then what you're hearing then when you hear something, if you hear something, is probably repeated three or four times before it gets to you. We had a vote, and the vote was on a resolution, not policy, on a resolution. And it was about how fast and what's the expectation of the faculty to work some specific changes in terms of general education requirements. And all I want to say is whenever you hear about this and whatever you hear about this, let me tell you, I'm not the least little bit worried about a vote. The work that we're doing with currently as the chair of the Faculty Alliance, Dr. Robert Bachman out of UAA, the work with that group right now is really quality work, and the Senates are contributing to that. And we've got a lot in the mill that we've got to do, and the plans are coming together to be able to do that. Now, the board expressed its frustration on one particular area, and it was a split vote, and a split vote loses, okay? It was a 5-5 vote on a compromise language that Dana and Robert Bachman had put together to kind of take the edges off the language a little bit that was more amenable to both sides. The board didn't like it. They wanted the hard language. That doesn't strap us down in the least. We're going to go forward. We're going to work not only the GERs, but the common outcomes, the common course outcomes, which is really the gold standard that we're after. We're going to work those just fine. What the board did, though, is it said, we've got a lot of work to do, and we need steady progress. not on again, off again, not 2 or 3 years to do one item, but steady progress, nose to the grindstone, keep working at it, keep pushing it. That's fine. That's a message I can take any day, and I have. For many years, I've had bosses who have said, pick up the pace. I don't look at votes as winning and losing. I listen to the message in the vote. The message was not a destructive message at all. It was a message that you would expect a board of regents who are mandated by the Constitution of the state of Alaska, as far as I know, maybe the only state where the higher education board is actually in the Constitution itself of the state. They run this university. And so if they're looking over our shoulder saying, you guys need to pay attention to the future and move on, okay, I hear you, got it. Pay attention to the future, move on, we got a great plan, we're going to do it. But we still work together, we still use shared governance, we still don't over rush the important decisions that need to be made, and we still need to be thinking about students. Not you, not me, but about students. About the teaching that goes on, the learning that we're hoping is happening, and that combination of the two in whatever venue we decide we put together, whether it's technology or face-to-face. As long as we're both interested in that, and we're going to make sure that that is not compromised in any way, for any reason, I think we're going to do just fine. So if you hear something about it got tense in the board and so on and so forth, hey, it was not tense. You haven't seen the tense board yet, if anybody thinks that was tense. I've been in some board meetings where I was afraid I was going to get fired on the spot because it was so tense that you pop off. You know, you say that thing you wish you hadn't have said, and it gets real quiet. There was nothing like that, believe me. There was nothing like that. So I appreciate the work that you all are doing, contributing to the efforts that are underway. I have great faith in the representative units, like Senates, like the Faculty Alliance, like the staffs, and even the students, when I sit down with them. We're committed, we're focused, and we've got the university and the mission in clear focus. And let's not let anything blur that focus, because it's real easy when times are tough to start drifting off in different directions and starting to get shrill and worry about the sky is falling. I for one, don't worry about stuff like that. I mean, you just take care of it. You just do it. You just fix it. You just work it out. And I've been in an awful lot of different situations where I could have been real worried about something, but I had the self-confidence in the team that we're going to get through this and it'll be okay. And that's exactly the way I feel right now. So let that message be the one that came out of the board meeting, if you will. And then you can hear about the particulars and compare what I've just told you with whatever you hear, and then make up your own mind if you want to. You know, transcripts are available. If you ever want to look at what was said in a board meeting and you're curious, that stuff is available to you. I'd be happy to get it to you. So those are kind of the biggies right now. And I'll go ahead and stop there, and I'd be happy to take any questions on any subject, not just the ones I talked about, if you have something on your mind.
Questions for President Gamble?
Yes.
President Gamble, do you see a RIP program coming along again?
You know, I've been asked that because, as I said, you know, you're getting closer and closer to the – no. For 15, I don't. For 15, what I want to look at right now that really, really interests me is our vacancies. I want to look at positions. You know, we've got spaces, faces, and FTEs. FTEs are mostly for dollar purposes. Spaces, we've got a lot of spaces that don't necessarily have faces. And then we've got a lot of faces that don't necessarily have spaces. Now, that's where I want to look right now, because I can't figure it out. We've got about 6 different categories of employees. Some of those are funded. Some of those are authorized by the legislature. Many of them are not authorized by the legislature, and so on and so forth. So as an example, you know, I want to start in areas like that and work the efficiencies out. If I have a position, I mentioned it before, been empty for a year or more, It's not being advertised. It's not on the street. There was a time when we did that because you get the salary because you put in for a salary amount in the budget. The salary amount for that position comes out, but there's nobody there. So what do you do with the money? It becomes discretionary money, and you can use it on things that weren't appropriated, right? Well, in a time like this, that was great, but we can't afford to do that anymore. And so you kind of wring that out of the system, right? You recoup that salary. You get rid of that position. Hiring freezes, I'm going to leave that up to the chancellors, but that certainly is a tool. You've got 50 positions that come open in a year. You fill 40 of them. You fill 25 of them, whatever the chancellor and the provost decide needs filling. There's a whole lot of those kinds of things before anybody ever gets a pink slip. Now, I will say on the adjunct side of the house, I like to consider the adjuncts like I consider a throttle. The fact of the matter is you can throttle up with adjuncts and you can throttle back with adjuncts. They are the most flexible in personnel on the faculty side. So if we get down to the point of considering courses, programs, then the first place that's going to be looked at is going to probably be on the adjunct side. So, I mean, that's a lot to look through before you ever get to a real pink slip in the sense that you're talking about. And in a RIF, no. No, a RIF is I've been through that. I mean, that's an entire program. That's an entire program with lots of legalese and HR considerations and so on. And I'm not seeing that from a system level. I can't speak for the chancellors, but I have not heard them going around talking about, quote, RIF.
President, I have a question for you. I've served on the Chancellor's
Budget Options Committee, and now I'm on the Provost Planning and Budget Committee. So I have some understanding, anyway, of what our budget challenges are. One thing I was wondering, kind of as you were talking about areas where we can increase revenue, and you mentioned sort of more job training type of things, what I worry about, is, especially as a faculty member of a research university, is sort of the need to stay independent of funding sources. So do you perceive sort of, this is going to sound really corny, but a red line, that you don't see us crossing in terms of, you know, dependence on certain funding sources for the university, where we would become basically, you know, an employee of somebody else or at the bidding of somebody else, as opposed to an independent research and educational institution?
Yeah, I think, you brought up something that I probably didn't make very clear. I think our community campuses and our basically our two-year programs, that's the other side of the red line. I mean, when you've got the research and you've got faculty, particularly the tenured faculty side, I don't see them going out and marketing workforce training. I see the workforce training that I was talking about being more over in the community campus side. I can see very easily them increasing their ability to conduct that kind of training. I can see things like like the MAPS program. I mean, we're doing mine training, for example. We're partnering with the Canadians, doing hard rock mine training. I can see more of those kinds of things. Those are the niches that I'm talking about, but they're really out of the workforce development side of the house, which then translates more to the two-year program side of the house. I don't personally see some sort of natural growth of our community campuses into four-year campuses. You know, some people have a view that left unconstrained, our two-year campuses will eventually turn into four-year programs someday. That's not the way the system should go. In my view and the view of the chancellors, the roles and missions need to be very, very clear between our four-year programs and the main campuses. Some of, you know, with all the technology being used that we can use, that you all choose to use appropriate to the cause, but then there's the two-year programs, which is the workforce development, and that's where we may go out and market We used to have corporate programs. We used to have an organization called Corporate Programs. And essentially, with Alyeska, that's how they got started, is Alyeska wanted a number of courses for their people. And so we said, we'll do it, and we formed an office, and we actually built their coursework, their curriculum, sold it back to them. That kind of a model could be expanded considerably across the system, but in the two-year programs. And then the two-year schools need to consider themselves in terms of their two-year programs and their alignment and articulation into four-year programs. But that's a handoff. That's not a growth, if you see what I'm saying. That's where the red line is in my mind.
Thank you.
And I'll ask a quick one, hopefully quick. President Gamble, the legislature sees the university as having a number of ways that it can raise revenue that is under our control as opposed to their control, so things like research funding and so forth. But one of those is tuition. And I'm wondering at what point do we consider raising tuition to meet some of the costs of offering the programs that otherwise might have to be deleted?
There's two ways to raise tuition. It's like selling vegetables. It's price or volume. I would rather grow the volume and keep the price down. If we try in an environment in Alaska where the demographics are actually reducing the number of graduates that are coming into the system, we're down 1,000 graduates over the last couple of years and coming out of high school. We generally graduate 8,000, we're down to about 7,000 in round numbers. If that's not going to change, and if we're not going to go out and recruit anybody and raise the number of degrees that we're conferring and the number of students that are in the pipeline toward those degrees, then you've got sort of a captive audience and you're just raising the cost on them. That model doesn't work either. So I would say, sure, we can raise tuition. I'd rather do it by getting more students to give us the tuition as opposed to taking the few that we've got and raising the tuition on them, because it goes into double digits really fast. And I don't think that's sustainable. So where's the sweet spot? I don't know, but we're going to have to find it. Now, is tuition off the table in terms of raises? No, it's not off the table. There's nothing off the table right now,
as far as I'm concerned, that we won't talk about. There are some things
kind of far out there, but we're having a robust conversation that looks at everything, and tuition is on the table. But it's not going to be the salvation. You know, it only works for 1 year. If you look at contractual pay raises, if you look at the staff pay raise, if you look at cost of utilities, operations and maintenance increases per unit of work and so on, we have to cover about a 17, we have to cover about a grand total of about $17 million each year in increased costs. And so if I raise tuition in the first year, in the next year it just comes back and hits me again. In the next year it hits me again. And I can't keep up with those kinds of jumps in expense with just tuition alone, if you see what I mean. Because if I raise tuition more than about 5%, the squawking starts. If I start getting into 10% and 20%, I get some real dollars. It doesn't even cover 1 year by itself. And then the next year, I'm back at doing the same thing again to cover the next year's growth. And so that model fails on that. But having said that, I'm sure over the next 5 years we're going to see some tuition increases. I just don't know what they're going to be, and I rely on a whole lot of people to advise me on that. And we'll go through a process before we ever announce any tuition raises, you know, that will involve everybody.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for President Gamble?
Yeah, President Gamble, this is Mike Davis here in Dillingham. And I guess one of the concerns I also have, and I don't know if you really have an answer to it, but as we look at these declining sources of revenue, that's also going to be sending a message to these students that are thinking about, do they want to come to the university, do they want to go someplace else? And is there going to be a program for me for the 4 years that I'm there? And I've already had students ask me, what's the program is this program going to be viable in the next couple of years? So I'm sure that's also going to be part of your challenge. So you can comment on it, but it's just it's a thought that certainly been occurring to certain people as well.
You know, I go at it, that's a great question, and I go at it on a bit of a limb because I would say that's pretty much the domain of the Chancellor Provost team as to how they're going to approach that. But if I was a student looking at a certain course of study and not knowing whether it was going to be there or not, I would certainly have that same concern. But it's not unlike what many of the universities across the country have gone through. And in some cases, there's been transfers from students from one university to another where a program actually looked like it was going to go away, and so they jumped over to another university that had decided to keep the program. I think it's a concern. I think that the program review process that would end up dropping any programs in the UA system would have to be, first of all, go through a process whereby the number of students affected, you know, we're going to know that. And then there's going to have to be loud and clear communication with regard to the stability of a particular program or not, so people can plan. It's when we can't make a decision or won't make an announcement for an extended period of time that fear of the unknown starts getting more and more people agitated because they don't know how far up and down the list of programs we're actually going. And I think the secret is to make the decisions, lock those decisions in and communicate them very, very clearly as quickly as possible, and you'll minimize the number of students who will be caught in that area of not knowing and trying to decide what their future steps are going to be. I don't think you can get around having some of that, but I think there's a way you can limit it. Well, I thank you very much for your time, and again, I thank you for what you do.
You can't believe right now how well things are going across the system. I mean, in the time I've been here, it'll be 4 years in June, I've never seen as many
accolades coming back to the university system. UAF, the flagship university, you guys have got some great accomplishments going on, and the prospects, it seems very, very odd at the time when the budget seems to be the tightest, but the prospects for continued success have never been better, building on what you've already got and what's going on. We've got a great team. We've got great people. I just hope that we can hold on to everybody and not lose people because they get discouraged while we get through this period. There may be some loyalty involved in that and wanting to see the university through because you believe in it, and I hope that that's the way it is with many of you. But until we get a clearer picture of the future, I want to be honest with you and put as much on the table without any sunshine or fog count, as the case may be. And as always, if you've got recommendations, if you've got suggestions, if you got a gripe, if you want to come talk, this is the time to do it because there's a lot of thinking and planning and trying to figure out what we're going to do next that's swirling around. We're looking at other universities, but you all have a lot of contacts out there in academia, and you may have some great ideas that we can use. The only idea that's not going to work, everything's on the table, but I guarantee you going down to Juneau and standing in the middle of somebody's desk and hollering louder, we want more money, is probably the single one idea that just simply will not work. I wish it would, and in the past it did, but that's not the case now. With that, thank you very much.
I'll be curious to see if there's a bunch of Alaska Airlines ticket on eBay now. But thank you very much, President Gamble. We are a bit behind schedule, but I still want to go to governance reports before the break. Staff Counsel Brad Crick, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I will try to be quick. It's a heavy act to follow. I want to say real quick, congratulations and condolences, David, on the Faculty Alliance Chair.
Thank you.
And I wanted to let faculty know that staff council, a week and a half ago at our last meeting, we passed a resolution asking the chancellor to bring a bullying awareness training that was done at statewide and is being rolled out at UAS to bring it to UAF. With an eye toward making it available for supervisors by July 1st and making it available for all staff, right? Actually, we said all employees by December 31st of this year. And so that actually hasn't been signed and sent to his office yet, so it's, but it was passed at our last meeting. And then I just wanted to comment about the calendar. It occurred to me while listening to talk about the academic calendar, that might be a good topic for System Governance Council, especially if it gets revised to be more focused on to include the alliance chairs, the staff alliance, faculty alliance, and the coalition of student leaders. And then the last thing I wanted to say is I saw on your today's agenda a motion relating to geographic differential, and I wanted to express my support for that motion. I know that, you know, that in particular is not going to be an easy item. It's not there's really no way you can say, oh, this can be zeroed out some other way. It's definitely an increase in costs, but I think it's something that the university needs to look at, and it's something that that staff have pushed for. One other thing I'll say about it is that I had a chance to talk to UAHR's compensation director following up on a resolution, or a suggestion from last year's Staff Alliance compensation group, and I asked about geographic differential, and they had evaluated geographic differential apparently only looking at Fairbanks employees, which was a very, very high cost. And so I asked, well, can you look at it looking at non-Fairbanks employees? And my suspicion is that cost, that would represent a much less staggeringly high cost, and maybe that is an option for going forward. And that is everything I've got for staff.
Thank you very much, Brad. Any questions for Brad? Seeing none, thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Is anybody here from ASUAF? Danny, are you here from athletics? She's out of town. And Falk?
United Academics? Yeah, just quick comment. Just from a union perspective, I'm really concerned about the budget, of course. It's not no big surprise. But the issue there really is that it, I think we should be aware that it affects not only the university, but certainly Alaska as a whole, and also the Arctic research. And so the question really is about the burden that we carry and how is the burden shared and how is the burden distributed. And so from an academic perspective, I'd just like to bring to the attention that there are scientists, of course, it affects their opinion and their research. And scientists are usually not the ones that are directly voting their vote with their feet. That means their leaf. And we've seen some cases like this. I hear that sometimes in the environment where I work, and I just want to bring that to the attention. My question really is, and you know, how is these? Is there any pushback? Because at the moment the burden is so much in the administrative side and on the faculty side, but there needs to be a wider awareness. We heard just a minute ago about how the management is still dealing with this, but I still believe that the pushback to the legislator or whatever should be much stronger, simply because the concern is so big and it affects so many people in the interior Alaska and Alaska as a whole, and certainly from the faculty side. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Falk. Questions for Falk? Okay, Jane, UFT.
I just wanted to give a little good news for employees. The UA Choice Health Plans, employees and their spouses or FIPS will each be eligible to earn a $600 rebate by participating in the Healthy Roads Wellness Program. And information about this will be out within the next week from our benefits, UA benefits coordinator. But there's two things to earn the rebate. You have to complete a personal health assessment and submit a biometric screening. And then you're eligible for $600 each. So that'll be out by the 14th, as well as the stuff for about open enrollment for health plans for the following year.
Dana, you know, there are all kinds of rumors going around about the various wellness programs we've had, and I know in the past I've clarified who owns the data, for example, the biometric screening, and from what I understand, it will stay with the company. Another question that's come up in the past is, is when people participate in the program that they start getting rather annoying phone calls by employees of those companies about, have you taken your medication? Are you doing whatever, whatever? Do you know anything more about how that would operate?
I don't know about those phone calls. I mean, that's questions for the director of benefits. But I kind of imagine they're going to continue. But, again, that's for the director of benefits. But I did want to answer the question that Amy asked at the last Senate meeting about where will the personal health assessment and biometric screening data be stored. And it will all be on the Healthy Roads Secure Portal. No individual information will come back to the university.
Okay, thank you, Jane. Any other questions for Jane? Okay, seeing none, let's have a fairly quick break, maybe about 5 minutes. Come back at, that clock says 3:30, but that's wrong. Come back at 2:30. Thank you. Hello. Can everybody please grab a seat? Because it's no longer 3:30 or 2:30. Okay. Our next item of business is a happy one. It's a motion to confirm the outstanding senator of the year. Cecile, do you want to say anything, or do you want me to just go ahead and do it? Okay. The Outstanding Senator of the Year Selection Committee received a couple of nominations at least and considered them under the able stewardship of Cecile Arden, President-elect Cecile Arden, and has voted in strong support of Dr. Franz Meyer as the Outstanding Faculty Senator of the Year. And by tradition, we ask for a confirmation from the Faculty Senate endorsing the recommendation from Cecile's committee. So if I could have a motion to, thank you, and a second. Thank you. And are there any objections? Let's just do it this way. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Let the record show that it was unanimously agreed to. Thank you, Franz Meyer, and thank you for conducting this, Cecile. And thank you for all your service, Franz. Appreciate it. Our next item is election of president-elect for 2014 to 2015. It is too late to withdraw. Those of you who are nominated, it's too late to withdraw, I'm just saying. At the time that the agenda was put together, we had one nominee. However, we now have a second nominee. So rather than having a motion to confirm the nominee that we have, we will have a vote. Jane is now passing out ballots for the vote. Folks who are remote, please send in your email, vote to Jane Harvey. The candidates are Donnie Bret Hart, who has submitted a personal statement that is part of the agenda. Dr. Deborah Mitchell was nominated but accepted the nomination only a day or so ago, and so his personal statement is available as a separate copy. I believe it was at the table at the beginning. I believe it was at the table at the entrance to the room. So. Please consider those are the two candidates. Are there any other nominations I should ask before we go on? Okay. So once you have your nominations, your ballots, please vote and hand them in.
I was wondering if we could hear from the two people that have been nominated for this.
I suppose while we're waiting for the ballots to be all the way passed out, we could, if there are any questions or comments at this point, that might be appropriate. John.
Yeah, there's only one thing that concerns me about
the one of the candidates in a positive way, I suppose. It's just that I think it would be important that our voices not be and all of our power be concentrated in one place. So I'd like, if I could, to ask Debu if he actually gets, if you win United Academics and you're president-elect, how are we going to balance? How would we balance that? I'm a little concerned because the missions of the Senate and the Union are very different, and I'm worried about some potential conflict.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that question, John. I haven't won the United Academics election yet, and I don't have any idea where we stand. But if that were to happen, I have to really consider seriously where to put my efforts. Okay, that will be based on your input, definitely, and there will be a serious consideration on that. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to say is that, although, and I know many will, some of you may not like what I'm going to say, is that we are a unique faculty governance here, where in most of the university, the faculty senates. Did I lose? Okay. In most of the universities, the faculty senate is the body. In our university and many of the unionized universities, there is a split, and the common goal, the split is not going to affect anything. That the split is based on curricular versus other aspects of the faculty. Faculty rights or responsibilities. So, yes, you are absolutely right. We need to separate those, and that will be a strong consideration. Did I answer your question?
Okay. Thank you. Tony, just in the interest of fairness, do you want to make any comment at this point? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I just didn't want to cut you off. Okay, so when you are done voting, please deposit your blue ballot in the box, no stuffing, and Jane will count them up. We'll move on now to, I'll just mention that the third attachment to the agenda is the new UAF Faculty Senate election, so the results are in, and you can see who the new senators will be. Please help us remember, help your colleagues remember, that the first meeting of the new Senate will be at the end of the May Senate meeting that we will have. So this Senate's last meeting will be the May meeting, and that will also be the first, immediately after, that will be the first meeting of next year's Senate. So the new senators will need to come to that. Okay, new business. Let me just make a quick comment about our audio stuff. Jane tells me that they're trying to troubleshoot what's going on with audio, and that there's a theory that folks with laptops who are plugged in wirelessly, somehow that may be influencing it. I don't know. I was just asked to pass that along.
That's what the airlines say.
Yes. So if the building crashes, it's your fault. Oh, there. The second thing is, folks who are remote, if you wind up being interrupted, please don't put us on hold, because that is what plays Alaska Airlines commercials and stuff. So if you need to go offline, please hang up and then call back in. Okay. We have a motion to reaffirm Department of Foreign Languages and Literature's UNIC criteria submitted by UNIC Criteria Committee. Chris, do you want to speak to that at all?
Sure. The department has only made some tiny updates to the UNIC criteria to bring them in line with the new CBA for United Academics. Otherwise, they are the UNIC criteria that have been in place, and they've been working for the department. So the committee has passed them forward and moves that we approve them now.
Okay. I will consider that a motion. Do we have a second for? Thank you. And are there any objections, any discussion about this? If there are no objections, then the motion carries. Move on to item B, motion to create a new information technology committee of the faculty senate submitted by the administrative committee. That's 180 attachment 5 to your agenda. This is the reason why we have this motion before us is that we are encountering more and more examples or instances wherein faculty are asked to weigh in on technical issues concerning either learning management systems or student feedback for courses or other technology issues. And it seemed to us at the administrative committee that it would be, number one, the other universities in the system have an IT committee that they can refer these questions to. And number two, that it would be useful for us to have such a committee here that can ponder that and provide faculty input on technology issues. So we agreed to develop a motion to put together a permanent committee on technology, information technology. A permanent committee, just as a reminder, is one that does not is not consisting solely of senators. It consists of faculty from throughout the university, potentially. So that is the motion that's before you. And are there any questions about it? Actually, to be formal, I am introducing it, but as the chair of this body, I am not allowed to make a motion. So for us to consider it, thank you. And is there a second? Thank you. Okay, now we can discuss it. So are there any questions concerning this motion? Concerns, discussion?
What's the problem that this is going to solve?
Well, the most immediate one is going to be looking at the options for learning management systems in the near future. We're being told by statewide OIT that Blackboard is becoming increasingly expensive, and there's a search for alternatives. And one of the things we want to make sure that we do is have a strong and coherent faculty voice when it comes to selecting a new LMS, a new learning management system. So that's the near term problem that it will have to tackle. Wow. Okay. Maybe somebody can call the question. Thank you. All right. All in favor of this motion, I'm going to ask for a voice vote just because I'm not sure where everybody is on this. Please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Thank you. Motion carries, and we will have a new information technology committee. Motion C, to endorse the electronic course evaluation report results submitted by the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee, which is attachment 6. Franz, would you like to speak with us in consultation with Eric? I think he's here or was here.
Yeah, sure. So this is basically the topic that came up last time and was presented to you by Eric Madsen. It's the findings of an ad hoc committee that was formed more than a year ago and was evaluating electronic course evaluation options for UAF. And so the main three findings that he presented last time was that we recommend to move towards an electronic option in the near future for various reasons that were presented by Eric last time and also summarized in the report. And we also recommend a specific system that we think is very useful for and very well equipped to meet UAF's needs. And the third part of the motion is to also recommend the formation of a work group that should be formed very, very soon to move that particular topic forward. So I would like to ask you to endorse this. I think we lost audio. Is it back? Yeah. And so there was a discussion online, and the discussion items were integrated in this motion, the questions that came up. There's also a little flyer that was handed out. So it's likely to be the provost's office did some first assessments of cost savings that might be associated with passing this motion, and it is likely that there will be significant cost savings in terms of salaries for staff that will be saved, but partly exactly figuring out how much money will be saved will be part of this work group that should be convened as soon as possible to figure out a testing and sort of a dry some sort of an implementation option for the system, a pilot option for the system, so that we can evaluate its fit to UIF and the associated savings, also financially, and how it works in the classroom, how staff react to the new system, to evaluate that. So I would like you to hopefully endorse this motion. I think it's the right thing to do. It's a move forward. I think it's of course would change a few things at UAF, but I think it's the right thing to do at this moment to look into the future in that direction.
All right. I think you are the maker of the motion. Is there a second? Thank you. Any questions for funds or discussion? Yes?
So I just have a question about transitioning to electronic course evaluation.
When you do it in a paper form,
the students are captive. You know, you've got them in the class. They have to fill it out, kind of forced to do it if they show up. Are they going to do this offline, or how do we deal with the fact that we may not have a way of ensuring they respond?
Yeah, so there are options to try to continue doing this in the classroom. Most of these systems nowadays are coming on, you know, are adopted to smartphones. You can have them do them on the phone while they're in the classroom. You could do them in the lab if you want, in the computer lab, and have them do it there. So there are options to continue doing this in the classroom. There are other options with incentivizing contributions by students and participation by students. The system that we are recommending is very aware of the issue of if you take it out of the classroom, then you know the incentive, the direct incentive, goes away to some degree. So one of the reasons why we recommend this system is because they are very invested in providing means to incentivize students and engage the students in the process. So they could convince us, not only on the technology side, that they have a vested interest in that, but also in the entire system setup. For instance, they offer active participation from their side. If they see participation in the process go down, they will actively contact the university and provide solutions and offer solutions for increasing participation. So in the end, one of the changes will be that it has to be made a little more transparent to the student why the evaluation process is useful for them. But there are solutions out there, and I think that that's something that can be solved, partly by taking the technology to them in the classroom, by having them do it on their cell phone while you are in the class, partly by doing in computer labs, but partly also by making it clear to them that their voice is heard and makes a difference in the process. So that's one of the things that when you read research and what the system managers have told us, that one thing that helps spur participation the most is if you make them believe that if they give us feedback, that we will take that feedback and incorporate it in the way we teach. So I think there are solutions to it, and I think it's going to move us or keep the process going the way it's going right now.
I saw another hand down here, and then okay.
So I have a few things to ask. The first one is I saw Reiner's sent out an email where he said, during this transition, are we going to have paper versus that option? That's, yeah, okay. The second thing is that is this really a course evaluation or an opinion of instruction?
Excuse me, can you say this again?
Okay, is this an evaluation of the course or an opinion of instruction by the students? And that's a big difference.
Yes, are you talking? So that was part of the first discussion that we had initially in the first period of this analysis, is what do we want to get out of course evaluation? And is that what you're talking about, whether you're evaluating the course or evaluating the instructor? Or is that the question? Or
well, the evaluation goes a little bit deeper than offering an opinion about the instruction. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So my, I just have an issue with the word evaluation, because this is not an evaluation. This should be an opinion of instruction as we used to have on the paper. So calling it an evaluation actually misleads the students, saying that we are now evaluating the instructor or something. I don't know what they want to think.
Yeah, okay. So initially, if we don't want to, the way the questions that we have on the forums and the way that the types of things we ask from the students don't have to change. And this is something that the work group can decide, is, you know, do we want to stick with the types of questions that we have right now? And if we want to, we totally can. So there's no requirement to move to a different question set.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I understand. I'm just saying, can we replace the word evaluation with opinion of instruction, is my question.
Deborah, I would just comment really quickly. We haven't had a student, the SOIs are long gone. We're now in an IAS, which I think stands
okay,
for
yeah, the whatever it is.
System, right? Which yeah. is, so we've already kind of crossed that bridge, I think, with moving to the IAS anyway. I mean, I think that's breaking new ground.
We chose that word because that's usually the common way how these systems are referred to. So I guess that's why we use course evaluation. And to the first question, that is also up to us. So the system that this particular system supports both on paper and online course evaluation. So we can there's a wide range of things we can do in terms of phasing in the system. So we can keep classes on paper if we want to, and then phase in types of classes over time with that new system. So we're pretty flexible, but how exactly we want to phase it in is also a question that this work group should address. So with the work group, we move that forward and address these issues.
Just a quick comment. I think what Debo is after is it implies that it's a true assessment, an objective assessment of teaching, when in reality it is actually an opinion. And therefore, the value and the interpretation of the results will be different. And that's for the work group, I assume, to address. The question for me is, how does it affect promotion and tenure? And because interpretation of this is bread and butter for people who get promoted or tenured or not. And if we start to interpret an IAS score of 0.3 and deny people because of that, you know, we had these discussions. So anyway, I think this will be dangerous in the working group, I assume.
Yeah, I think so. So in the end, none of this needs to change. To some degree, the interpretation is kind of independent of the technology, really. But that's certainly something that is also worth addressing, yes.
Okay, any other questions for Franz? Ken?
We're voting on an actual approval of this whole system, correct? I see a pilot in there. Have you ever considered doing a pilot first and then, based on that, getting approval of the whole system?
We are approving to move those recommendations forward, basically, to the provost's office. And part of this is doing a pilot. Eric, if you want to jump in.
I think I may be able to help with part of that. The company has two main models for implementing a system. That said, they're willing to work with us and do whatever we want. They said that we could essentially write it. But their two main models would be a pilot system that would allow for up to three projects. And a project is what they refer to as an instance. So if you had a field-based course that had both a paper and electronic version, and a campus-based course that had both the paper and electronic version, that would be four projects. So we pay essentially by the increment for how we do that. None of that data belongs to us. It resides on their server, and you can't transfer any of that over after the end of the pilot. So if we decide not to do it, then the money and the data are lost. What they're proposing is, they have such confidence in this, they say, look, if you want to go ahead and implement it, we'll give you a money-back guarantee up to 2 weeks after the last reports are submitted to decide you don't want it, you walk away. But what you get is a full implementation. You can poke around in any corner of the system. You can use it in as many times and as many ways as you want to, so that you really get a sense of it rather than just getting a sample. So.
We are approving the full process, correct?
Well, but...
We're not just doing a pilot and then deciding.
The point would be, even if we opted to do what they're calling their full implementation, that serves the same purpose functionally as a pilot, because at the end of a year, If we decide it didn't work, we don't like it, we walk away, we lose nothing.
Except we've already approved it, and it'd be pretty hard to unapprove it by getting through
no.
the whole faculty senate.
I don't. That's not the way I read the motion, but
isn't it?
Susan Provost Hendricks has a comment.
Well, I think just a point of clarification: you're voting to approve the report or endorse the report, which is a recommendation to my office to. Establish the working group to work out some of the questions that have been discussed, to engage in some kind of an assessment or pilot with the vendor that they recommend. But that's not a commitment to continue with this if it doesn't work, because as Eric has pointed out, there are ways to stop it if it's unsuccessful.
It wouldn't have to come through Faculty Senate to stop that process then. Okay, that's good.
Just one more question very quick, and sorry if I missed that. Does that include e-learning, or is it only face-to-face classes? Or is it adaptable to e-learning?
It does technically include e-learning in this adaptable to e-learning. So one of the advantages could be that we have a really one integrated system for all types of classes we offer.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Are we ready to vote? Okay. All right. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes carry. Motion carries. Thank you, Franz, for all your work on this. And Eric? I know it's late. We are going to run late. I'm sorry. The last item of new business is Motion D. It's actually a resolution urging the Board of Regents to adopt the salary geographic differential submitted by the Faculty Affairs Committee. Is there anybody here from the Faculty Affairs Committee? I think that was you, Falk, right? No. Who's from the Faculty Affairs Committee? Would you be willing to speak to this?
Yeah, so it's really a pretty straightforward motion. Basically, cost of living has increased at the rural campuses disproportionately to the rest of the state over the past decade. And there's a Board of Regents policy that states
can,
that...
Can you get closer to a mic?
That basically
is your mic on?
Has,
is your mic on?
Yeah. Get the light. Cost of living has increased at the rural campuses disproportionately to the other campuses. And there's a Board of Regents policy that states geographic differentials may be established by university regulations and be based on the most recent State of Alaska geographic differential study. Then furthermore, there's a UA regulation that states geographic salary differentials in the university are based on the most current State of Alaska geographic differential study, and the president will adjust the listings as necessary. So the motion is basically that the UAF Faculty Senate goes on record urging the UA president to adopt the salary differential recently implemented for state employees, which is the McDowell 2008 study for the staff and faculty of the entire University of Alaska.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to reiterate a couple of things that he said. One is that it's a resolution as opposed to a motion. It carries no force. Number two, it's essentially directed at the president to carry out what he's authorized to do as president with respect to setting geographic differentials in salary. So he's authorized to do it, and he has not done so. And so this resolution essentially says, please, Mr. President, do so. Are there any questions or comments concerning this? Oh. I suppose there's the formality of asking for a second to the motion. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that. Okay. Any questions or comments? Discussion?
We certainly can say many of Alaska.
I think we're ready. Oh, is somebody speaking online?
Yeah. I'm sorry. We certainly, in Dillingham, know that our differential is much lower than other agencies who work out here.
Thank you. I think we caught most of that.
All right. Any other
comments or questions? Are we ready to vote? All right. Yes.
Is it Anchorage too, or is it really just
school? It actually is statewide. So there's a report that basically sets a differentials in cost of living, and everybody is supposed to be gauged according to that. And so this, it's in the UA regs, and the current one is in there, but it's ancient. So you can look that up and see what it is. This would recommend essentially updating it to the most recent report concerning geographic differentials.
Okay.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Motion, the resolution carries. It's not a motion. The final item that is not. I'm sorry. Jane, who needs to say something? Jane. Oh, do you have an announcement?
No, I'll let you make the announcement. But if anyone answered the roll who's on the video or audio conference and you didn't realize you can vote by email, you may send me your email vote right away, please. And thank you for putting up with our technical difficulties today. Anybody in the room, Neil, still need to turn in your vote? Nope.
Okay. Sounds like we're nearing a decision. This is so exciting. The last item major concern for us is that we did have a motion that we were preparing to bring to this Senate meeting, and in the course of tweaking it, modifying it, trying to make it work, we got to the point where Cecile and I met with Chancellor Rogers, and the Chancellor told us that if this motion was passed by the Faculty Senate, that he would veto it. And we thought that it would probably be a better idea if we pulled the motion and did a bit more tweaking.
The reason why
is because the motion, which is attachment number 8, the main reason why is because it mentions two unions by name, and in general, policy should not mention entities by name. And so that was the tipping point for the motion. So what we plan to do is have the Faculty First Committee further modify this motion for the May meeting, and that motion will come up at the May meeting. At any rate, it is present for you to have a look at, and if you have any points you want to make about it now, that would be fine. Otherwise, you can funnel your comments or concerns or suggestions either to the Faculty Affairs Committee Chair, Knut Keeland, or you can certainly funnel it through either me or President-elect Lardon. Yes, Jane.
I'm just wondering, since you said that, why that the change wasn't just made to say represented faculty and not mention the names of the union, if that's all it was.
It was getting really late in the agenda setting process to the point where it felt like we were making a hash of it, frankly. And it there's a sense that you have when you're trying to get a motion ready and major pieces are flying in or flying out that it just didn't seem like it was ready for prime time.
I understand. Thank you.
Just a quick comment. Could we have a discussion by email as well, like we do for other, other motions and other stuff, or discussions, just let, through the Faculty Senate listserv?
We could potentially do that.
Because that will help. This needs to be vetted really well, in my opinion. Okay. And we don't want to miss an opportunity where a faculty member comes back or senator comes back later and says, well, I didn't get an opportunity to say anything.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion on this discussion item, which isn't a motion but will be a motion in the near future? Okay. Yes, Donnie.
Can you get to a mic?
Could give a little bit of background on, do the procedures for electing chairs really differ from department to department by a lot? And is this an attempt to sort of streamline it, or?
I think there are others in the room that can speak to this more directly, but what I have been told is that there is not in theory, but there's differences in practice. And and some of those differences in practice have come to take precedence over what is documented in policy. So this is essentially an attempt to reassert an overarching policy. Okay. Boy, oh boy. We have a is Amber Caglin here?
Thank you for having something
to say.
I would be very grateful.
If there's a green light on, it's on.
Okay, so my name is Amber Caglin, and I will be extremely brief because I know that you are running late. I work with the Dean of Students Office here at UAF, and I am here representing a committee that was put together through the campus statewide to review the student code of conduct. We've been working for the last year and now have some proposed revisions that we would appreciate the university committee to give us feedback on. I have a card at the back of the room with the website address that we have put together so that you can go up and review all of the significant changes as well as review the documents, the current code of conduct as well as our proposed code of conduct. We're going to be going through a review phase here with our feedback, and then we will put together our version for legal to review, then put it forward to the Chancellor's Cabinet in the fall for their fall meetings. So we encourage the entire university community, all faculty, staff, students, administration, to go on and review the changes that we're proposing and give us your feedback. Some of the things, the reasons that we're changing things, we want to make it less legalistic. We want it to be a little more concise for students so that they understand what the policies are, reviewing our processes, making them a little clearer so that students understand what the conduct process is a little better, as well as take into account some of the changes with technology and changes in our programs at all the campuses since this hasn't been reviewed since 1998. So I encourage you all to look through that, encourage your fellow faculty members, encourage your students to review it, and if you have any questions, I also have my business card on the back table, and I'll be here after the meeting to answer any questions you might have. So thank you very much.
Is there a link that we can just maybe steal from you and potentially post on our...
I can send the link to Jane, yep, and then we can send that out that way. It's probably a little easier. It is kind of a long link, but it's posted up through the UAA Dean of Students site. They're the ones that had put that up for us, so don't be hesitant when you see that it's a UAA website. It was a statewide committee from UAS, UAF, UAA, Kenai Peninsula College, and Mat-Su College.
All right. Any questions for Amber? Okay. Thank you. All right. And last thing, and then I'll announce the election result. Is there any public comment? Okay. Seeing none, the winner, the next president-elect of the UAF Faculty Senate is Debra Misra. So I appreciate Donnie and Debra for putting yourselves out there for this. It's a very important role, and I very much appreciate it. And I wish the new Senate leadership all the luck in the world next year. Okay. Comments, questions, and announcements? Oh.
Any comment from me? My shoulders are already feeling heavy.
They should.
But thank you all.
Okay. Any other general comments or announcements? Jane?
The promotion and tenure workshop will be Friday, April 25th, which is Spring Fest, from 10 to 12, right in this very room. So it was moved, but now it's back to this room, same place as always. So there's flyers on the back table. Please put them up and tell your colleagues. Thank you.
Okay. And any others? Okay. And any committee chair comments? Okay. Remember, the reports are all in the back of the agenda. If there's nothing else, then we are adjourned. See you in May. Thanks very much.